Vladimir Putin. Now, the president is on his way back to the United States after meeting with the Russian president for just over 2 hours. Meanwhile, Congressman Ron DeSantis was asked what the United States gained from this summit.
Maybe they made some headway on some of the nuclear proliferation. I mean, if you look at Russia, it's got a disastrous economy. The government's corrupt. But for that massive nuclear arsenal, they would be a country that would be wielding far less influence on the world stage. So if they made progress there, I think that's the number one reason.
This is USA Radio News.
I'm Nick Sobolewski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story that could save you hundreds of dollars a year. A woman named Linda just called. Her husband, Ray, has a $300,000 group life insurance policy, but is changing jobs and can't take it with him. Well, I shopped the many highly rated term life insurance companies we represent and found Ray, who is 41 and takes medication to control his cholesterol, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for under $27 a month. That's almost twice the coverage for less than half of what he had paid. If SelectQuote hasn't shopped for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 800-591-9426. That's 800-591-9426. 800-591-9426. Or go to SelectQuote.com. Since 1985, we shop, you save.
Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
Another good report on retail sales. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes has the details.
The retail sales numbers for June show the continuation of a five-month trend of steady rises, as the Commerce Department says overall sales were up by 0.5%, right in line with projections from experts. Leaving vehicles and gasoline out of the equation, sales increased 0.3%. The report also reflected an upward revision for May, moving the advance to a 1.3% gain, up from 0.8%. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Senator Rand Paul said he's worried about Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh's views on government surveillance programs, raising a potential snag in the closely divided confirmation battle. Back in 2015, while sitting on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit, Kavanaugh ruled it was within the Constitution to collect someone's phone records without a warrant. That is something that Senator Paul vehemently disagrees with. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Wayne Allyn Root, the conservative warrior. My show War Now airs every day right here on USA Radio from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern. I'm also the star of the Wayne Allyn Root Show on Newsmax TV, reaching over 50 million homes. But my favorite role is speaker extraordinaire. I was opening speaker at many Donald Trump for President events. I speak at Republican, conservative, and college GOP events, and I'm available to be the star at your next event. Contact me to arrange for a Wayne Root keynote speech. Call toll-free 888-444-ROOT. That's 888-444-ROOT. Or email wayneroot@gmail.com.
New York Democratic congressional candidate Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez struggled to explain her position on the Israel-Palestinian conflict that's been going on for years. She begins by trying to discuss the entire situation.
I also think that what people are starting to see, at least in the occupation of Palestine, is just an increasing crisis of humanitarian condition. And that to me is just where I tend to come from on this issue.
Now, in that answer, you heard her say the occupation of Palestine. Take a listen as she tries to explain what she meant by that.
I think what I meant is like the settlements that are increasing in some of these areas and places where Palestinians are experiencing difficulty in access to their housing and homes.
After a relatively steady price for gasoline over the past few weeks, motorists will see a slight increase this week. USA Radio Network's John Clemens has a story.
Mississippi shares the lowest prices with Alabama at $2.55 a gallon, while California remains the highest at $3.65. Patrick DeHaan of GasBuddy.com looks at the national average.
Well, it was a relatively minor swing. The national average increased about a penny and a half, closing at about $2.87 a gallon. That's up from about $2.86 a week ago. So not a huge increase, but an increase nonetheless. It was our first increase in the last few weeks.
And for USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Hello, my name is Robert Burns. My website is BobBurnsSpeaks.com, and I'm inviting you to listen to my show at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoons on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, entitled Awaken to Your Purpose. How many people walk through life awake and knowing why they were incarnated here in this beautiful planet? Not a lot of people do. I was in my late 40s by the time I found out, but now I know. So listen to the show, and maybe that'll promote you to awaken to your purpose. And thank you so much.
It's...
more times than we care to count.
I know. My son also has bipolar that he inherited from me, and he's been hospitalized also. I would like for him to do a show with you on bipolar, because that's a different kind of a depression, but just as devastating as what I went through.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know.
He's wonderful now.
I saw him at the time you spoke, you know.
Right.
And, you know, my son has schizophrenia. And he's also epileptic, so you know he's got a twofer, you know. But
people like us, we have to pull him out.
Exactly. Right now, he's doing very well. He has his own apartment. He has he volunteers one day a week at the Hunterdon Medical Center today.
Good
in fact,
for him.
And he has a job at BJ's. Three, 4 days a week. So he does.
Awesome.
You know, it's part time, but it's enough to get him out of bed in the morning and get him off to go to work, you know. So
Right.
So
it's
and
not
it's wonderful
so easy to get out of bed if you're depressed.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's very rewarding to me to have someone like you tell your story.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel that the more people who are famous
mm-hmm.
and tell their stories, it helps. It really does.
Well, you know, I knew I wanted a baby so badly. But my husband and I tried for 3 years. I'm a kindergarten teacher. I still teach. I wanted this baby so badly, and the environment was so right, and I fell apart. And I said to Richie after, like, a couple months, I said, if I could fall apart and I have everything, what about poor moms who don't have everything? I said, let's call a reporter in and we'll talk about it. I said, maybe I'll help one person, because I didn't think anybody had postpartum depression. To me, that was like an oxymoron. You don't have depression after a gift.
Right, right.
And
that's what makes it so hard to understand to a lot of people also.
Exactly. I wouldn't believe it if I heard it from somebody else.
Right. You say, you just had a baby. That's, you know, great. That's terrific. You know, it's a start of a new life and yada, yada. And, you know.
Yeah. And all the commercials showed the happy moms on
TV. Yeah, yeah.
And I said, nobody has this, Richie. So I said, maybe one other mother. So let's do it in the paper. And that mother, and now it's thousands of women in Postpartum Support International.
Yep,
There's a whole organization with thousands of moms. It's online. It's very easy to find information now. But not 31 years ago when I had it.
No, exactly.
It was very shameful.
Well, that's like when our son got ill. We didn't know. We never heard of NAMI. We never heard. What do you do? You know, it's like, you know, he was almost 20. And, you know, like, what happens? You know, what do you do?
Right.
Who do you turn to? You know?
Right.
And that's one of the reasons why my wife and I continue to do this in our old age. You know, again, like you said, if you could help one person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what it's all about. If we can help one person by either doing the radio show or teaching a class or running a support group, then it's all worthwhile.
It's all worth it.
Exactly. You know, and people ask me why I work, you know, why I do all this, and I tell them I work harder now than when I worked. When I worked, I was a boss. Like, these people under me, you do this and you do that, you know, and talk to me Thursday, you know. But now I look at my wife and I say, you want to do this? And she looks at me and laughs, you know. So, I have no one, so I have to do it. No, but we both do it. She's involved with NAMI also very much so. Mm-hmm. But if you would like, you know, you could start speaking of your journey, you know, how it came about.
It came about, I was blindsided by it because, like as I said, I woke up, you know, finally pregnant, and I had labor pains, and I was all excited because I said to Richie, everybody calls him Dick Cody, I call him Richie.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about Dick, but it's Richie. And I was in labor, and I wasn't even scared because I said, you know, I said in 24 hours I'll be holding my own baby. And then I went through 7 hours of labor, and the nurse asked me if I wanted to hold them, and I said, no, I didn't feel anything. I wanted 7-Up with ice, and I wanted to be left alone. And everybody told my husband, oh, she's really tired, and that's what's wrong with her. But it wasn't that. It was that I was disconnected from myself, and I had no idea why. I took the phone off the hook. I stayed in bed, but I couldn't sleep. We had a baby. I was fortunate enough to have a baby nurse for a week. I never once went downstairs to see how the baby was. I was, at the end of the first week, I was shocked to learn that, to realize I was depressed.
Mm.
And I called my OBGYN and I cried and I told him I was disconnected from myself and the baby. And he had never heard me cry before, so he called the only psychiatrist he knew, and there weren't many back then.
Right, right.
She had very little knowledge. She had a little knowledge of postpartum depression. But 4 days later, to my horror, I found myself sitting in a psychiatrist's office, and I'm thinking to myself, what in the world is wrong with me? I mean, she gave me an antidepressant. I'm like, great, a nut prescription, because I didn't know anything about it. And I was so embarrassed that I needed an antidepressant after being given, you know, the beautiful gift of a baby, that they put a cap on and sunglasses and went towns over to fill it because I was so ashamed and embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
But I went through months and months of changing antidepressants and nothing helped. And then I remember one day I was giving Kevin a bath and I was looking around the bathroom to see if I could find something to rinse his hair off with. And I spotted the glass on the sink next to the toothbrush. And then I was having these intrusive thoughts. And I got one that said, smash the glass on the side of the sink and cut the baby's throat. I would have these terrible intrusive thoughts. The psychiatrist told me they were intrusive thoughts. She explained them to me.
Right.
She said sometimes new moms, when they're depressed, they have them. Well, I had them, and they were awful. So I decided that, like, one night was a Friday night, and I was deathly depressed. My husband was out giving a speech, and I had a microwave oven idea. You could imagine. I was a mess. And I decided that when my husband came home from the speech, I would tell him I was going to put myself away because I didn't know anything about psychiatric hospitals or medicine or anything because I had never been on medication before or was a psychiatrist.
Right.
So he came home, and I was crying, and I said, I'm having scary thoughts about hurting the baby all the time. I can't do it. I can't be a mom. I have to go away. And he said, I was a wonderful mother because I have my master's in child growth and development. So I knew how to take care of a baby, and I was taking good care of him. And he said, despite the thoughts, and he said, you're a wonderful mother. You do everything for this baby. I said, I can't do it anymore. I can't deal with the thoughts. So I admitted myself to Carrier on Monday morning, and the head nurse, and back then no one knew about postpartum depression, the head nurse put me on the scale, and she said, you're 29 years old? And I said, yes. And she said, you just had a baby? And I said, yes. And she said, well, you, my dear, have had a lot of freedom, and you're not used to this. And because she was a woman and the head psychiatric nurse and probably a mother, her comments just worsened and deepened my shame.
Mm-hmm.
I was like she was mad at me. I was mad at myself, so I really didn't need her to be mad at me.
Right, right.
But all the way to the hospital, my husband was crying, holding on to me, saying, I'll get better. And depression means giving up all hope, and I did give up hope. And I just thought, well, there'll be a time when he'll realize I can't find myself again. Like, I tried after this baby was born to find myself, and I can't. I can't find myself. He'll have to. And the whole time to the hospital, I worried about what kind of mother he was going to marry. Because when you're a teacher, you know, some people are good with little kids, and some people aren't. And I was so afraid that he was going to marry someone that wasn't good with little kids. And that's all I worried about. And all he worried about was getting me better. We were on two different pages. And then I went to group therapy, and everybody was on drugs and alcohol, and I had a baby, and I didn't know why I was in that group, and they didn't know why I was in the group. Then we had art therapy, and it was February, so we were supposed to make Valentine's, and I was making Valentine's with my class in kindergarten for 10 years. It was like no one understood that my mood dropped, not my IQ.
Right.
It was awful. It was just so awful. And then, like, 28 days later, they discharged me because that's all my insurance covered.
Mm-hmm.
And they took a before picture and an after picture, and my pictures looked the same. I looked just as miserable on my after picture, and they were like, I think they realized there was nothing they could do for me. And then I came home, and I had this scary thoughts again, day and night, and I didn't tell my sisters or my mother that I was still depressed because I wanted to take care of him myself. I wanted to be a mom. And then I remember I had a girlfriend, Wendy. She had her baby like 7 days before I had mine. And she was wonderful with her baby. She had a baby, Nicole. And I wanted to have a mother like that woman. I wanted to have a mother like Wendy for my baby.
Mm-hmm.
So I followed everything. I spent every waking moment with Wendy. And everything she did for her baby, I did for my baby. If she went out and bought a toy, I went out and bought the same toy. Because myself, I couldn't feel anything. So I had to copy it. And she bought a stroller, and I had a brand new stroller from my baby shower. I went out and bought the exact same stroller she had for her baby, for my baby. And then I remember by now it was the summer, so I had it almost a year. And she wanted to sign up. She didn't know I was depressed, so I faked it. And she said she wanted to sign the babies up for swim class. So I said, okay, let's sign them up, because I figured that's what good mothers do. So I signed up. Kevin, and he was playing behind my legs in the pool, and I got an intrusive thought to push the baby under. No one will know it till it's too late. And by that time, I decided I would commit suicide because I couldn't do it anymore. I had already tried the hospital. I already tried a million medications. I was going to kill myself. I had to make sure that Kevin was safe. And for me, I needed peace. So I was going to go through the motions of the day and then take an overdose of all my medication and my yogurt that night.
And none of your medications worked?
It's what?
And none of your medications that they gave you worked?
No, none of them worked. Yeah. None of them. So I had a psychiatrist appointment that afternoon, and she looked at me and she said, you're not listening to anything I'm saying. She said, you need to go to the hospital again. I said, I'm not going to the hospital. It didn't work. So then she said, well, there's another kind of antidepressant that's kind of dangerous to use, but, we're running out of options here. It was called an MAO inhibitor. And I said, well, I have nothing else to lose. I said, death couldn't be any worse than what I'm living. So I tried it. And in 2 weeks, I stopped having thoughts. I would notice that I was giving Kevin a bath, and I didn't have a thought.
Right.
And then, I realized I could get through, half a day without a scary thought. Then an all day and night. And my spirits lifted. And within, 3 or 4 weeks, I was out of the depression. It was like I could be a mother to Kevin without these scary thoughts. And I was just so happy. And I was taking him to the playground, my own idea, not Wendy's. I was taking him to the playground. I was taking good care of him. I was making, I always took good care of him. But I was planning for his first birthday party. And so that medication saved my life. People don't want to be put on medication, but sometimes medication can save your life.
Yeah, you have to do what works.
Exactly.
I have a young lady, early 30s in California who calls me, and we talk a couple times on the radio. And she told me one time, she says, she has bipolar and severe depression. Mm-hmm. And I said, so what do you do for it? And she says, well, I run. I says, okay. She says, and I take some holistic medications. I says, okay, does it work? She says, yeah, it's fine. She says, it's helped greatly. I says, well, don't stop.
Exactly.
She says, you're telling me, you're not going to tell me about taking I says, whoa, stop. I said, I'm not a doctor, first of all.
Right.
Second of all, why would I tell you to take something if what you're doing is working?
Right.
It may not be the run-of-the-mill thing that all the psychiatrists and doctors and all prescribe, but it's working for you.
Mm-hmm.
So continue.
So exactly.
I says, the only thing I would say to you is that maybe down the road, 5, 10, 15 years, whatever, you may have to think about taking a medication along with right. what you're doing.
Right.
I says, but I'm not going to tell you to stop doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
exercise
people,
is always good, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Then medication or none, exercise is really good for you mentally.
And, you know, the problem with all of, you know, psychiatric medications is that what may work for me may not work for anybody else. You know?
I know.
And that's
know.
The sad part. And then they take, mm-hmm. well, this didn't work, but maybe it will work with this one. So they combine two of them together, you know.
You know,
so now
I
you
heard
take two.
I heard that they're doing, right on the horizon now is blood tests to direct you to the right type of medication.
They're that working on it. That's what I heard, too, also.
Yeah, I heard
But it's
that.
Not, you know, it's not been.
It's too new. It's
yeah,
too new.
Exactly. And it has to be, you know, go through all the tests and everything, you know, before mm-hmm. they, you know, make anybody, you know, allow anybody to, you know, do it. But mm-hmm. it's just, you know, it would be great. It would be great if they could do a blood test and determine that.
Yeah, that's what they're working on now.
Right, right. You know, but. It would. It would. Mm-hmm. You know. And, you know, like you said.
They're also working on transmagnetic therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear that?
Yes.
Where you can, put magnets on the person's head.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like a modern-day shock therapy. I had shock therapy like 22 times in my life. But this is different than that. You don't lose the memory.
Well, I know someone whose daughter has gone through that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
The shock therapy or the magnetic therapy?
The magnetic.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, so, like anything else, sometimes it works and
sometimes
it doesn't,
yeah.
You know. And,
right.
You know, it's just you have to do with or you have to go with what works mm-hmm. best, you know.
You have to be a patient.
Right. Exactly. And that not always happens,
you
know.
People sometimes give up.
Right. And, you know, or they get so tired of taking all these medications.
I know it.
That
but they have to hang in there.
They do. Absolutely. And, you know, that's why I have, like I said, someone like yourself telling your story, how long it went on and how long you had to go fight through it and, you know, all
mm-hmm.
this and how long it didn't work. And then it did work.
Right. I was shocked it worked.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's amazing.
But, like, depression is the absence of hope, and sometimes you don't believe it'll ever get better.
No.
I think that's the stuff that suicide is made of.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And or the hurt is so bad that anything they do, it would be better than this. You know?
Yes.
So,
exactly.
You know, unfortunately, that's true also. But, you know, like I said, if more people in your statue, quote unquote. Once a month, this lady and I do a presentation to educational services.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing, you know, she's into all this PowerPoint stuff, which is beyond my capabilities.
Me too.
You know, but she does it. And the first thing we put up is two big screens of all these famous people with mental
mm-hmm.
illness, most of them with depression.
Exactly.
And as a couple that always stand out, and I always comment on to the class that we're talking to. One of them is Buzz Aldrin.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a guy that walked on the moon, was
exactly.
an astronaut. He suffers from major depression.
Mm-hmm.
Winston Churchill.
Right.
Carried England on his back for 7 years. You know, he suffered from major depression.
Right.
You know, and all these people who... Thomas Jefferson, we all know about Abraham Lincoln,
right.
You know, Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson wouldn't walk in a room with more than 2-3 people in it.
Right.
And when he was writing the Declaration of Independence, he would get a hold of Franklin, meet him on a deserted corner at night, hand him the 3 or 4 pages he wrote, and Franklin would take it to the Continental Congress
mm-hmm.
because he wouldn't do it. He wouldn't go in that room because there's too many people. I have trouble saying it. Agoraphobia,
yeah.
I think it's called.
Right, you don't want to come out of your house.
Right, and he would go on a balcony and talk to 5,000 people.
Exactly.
You know, and if anyone listening has never been to Philadelphia or have been there, but hasn't, there's a thing called the Freedom Trail up there.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes you along the trail, and they will talk to you about Jefferson, you know, doing this, with Franklin. So mm-hmm. it's interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's very interesting. See people with mental illness. Well, every time someone in the paper does something horrible, it's always followed by he had a history of mental illness.
Right.
All the time.
That's right.
I say in my speeches, I would really like to get all the great people in the world that had a history of mental illness and just say that. Because all you see are the ones that commit crimes and do awful things.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of beautiful people out there, talented, loving, smart, brilliant people out there
right.
that have a history of mental illness. That's it. That's the way it is.
Yep, that's true. You know, and, you know, it's just, and the thing is, too, that statistics, and I'm not much for statistics, pardon me, because you can make numbers say anything you want them to say, but at least in my opinion. But you know that the chances of a person with mental illness, they're more likely to be the victim of a crime than commit the crime,
mm-hmm.
and that's a proven fact.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, every time somebody
has something horrific.
You know,
that
right.
we have to get it driven home in our heads that that's the kind of person that does mental illness. That nobody wants to talk about mental illness because it's so associated with terrible things.
Right. And, you know.
But we're missing all the great people in the world. We're missing so many of the great people. I know for a fact because I have people all the time pull me aside and say, you know, I'm on medication, but I never told anybody. And these are great people.
Right.
And I'm like, you don't have to be ashamed about it in front of me. And I would never tell anybody, but you don't have to be ashamed because you're a wonderful person.
But I mean, they should tell somebody, you know.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just something I had to do.
Good. You have something? Yeah. Could you speak up, please?
Me?
No. Can you hear me? Can you hear Tracy?
No. What did Tracy ask me?
Try again.
Okay, that brings me to ask you about the Speak Up When You're Down campaign.
I can't hear her.
Okay, she wanted to ask about... Try it
about
now.
About what?
Try it now.
A campaign called Speak Up When You're Down?
Right.
Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, when my husband and I, when my husband became governor, the first thing that we knew right away was that we had to do something for new moms because we went through hell. I had postpartum depression twice because I wanted another baby.
Mm-hmm.
And the longer I was off the medication, the deeper the depression became. So I had shock therapy when I was pregnant with my son, Christopher, and 11 times in my 9th month. And we said, this was so horrible for us. This was such a traumatic, horrible time in our lives. We've got to make it easier for women, and now you're the governor, so we're going to do it. So we did Speak Up When You're Down so that moms could call a 24-hour hotline if they were depressed and get connected with a therapist to help them through postpartum depression, just support groups. We started support groups all around the hospital. And then in New Jersey, we have a law now that is called the Melanie Blocker-Stokes Mothers Act, where new moms have to be educated about postpartum depression so they don't, like, I internalized it and thought it was a personal failure on my part.
Mm-hmm.
What we wanted to get across to new moms is this is an illness. This is not a personal weakness on your part any more than getting cancer would be a weakness on your part. So they got a 24-hour hotline. They could call. They could get help. They could get support groups. And basically it was trying to get women to speak up, actually, when they were down. We had commercials that had moms that were not. I mean, I saw a million happy moms changing diapers when I had a baby. Nothing about what could happen. So we had moms talking about they don't deserve to be a mom. And then someone tells them, yes, they do. It's not you. It's an illness and such. And it was something that we both really got involved in. And now they're trying to do it throughout the country. I've spoken throughout the country. In fact, I'm going to Arizona tomorrow. To speak to doctors I went to Harvard to speak to doctors, to the OBGYNs. The word is getting out there, and they want the whole country now to be educated about postpartum depression so that there aren't as many suicides as there are, and as many families being so horrible, going through such a horrible thing like what we went through. So the message is getting out there. The big problem that we have now is that there's not enough therapists, there's not enough psychologists, psychiatrists, people who can give medication to all the new moms. It's a big problem. It's the number one problem right now facing people who work on postpartum depression, that there's not enough places for women to go to that are affordable.
That's true. And even in this county, in Hunterdon County, we have, by statistics again, we should have around 34 psychiatrists in the county.
Mm-hmm.
We have about 5.
I know it.
And, you know, when you have someone that had a breakdown,
mm-hmm.
wound up in the hospital, was regimentated in the hospital, you know, 8 o'clock you got up, this you did
yeah.
this and this and this and this, and you took your meds at this time and whatever. And then they discharged that person.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be male or female, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell them as they're, you know, after hospitalization therapy and procedure, you go see a psychiatrist. Well, okay, fine. So they come out and they make an appointment.
Mm-hmm.
6, 8 weeks, 10 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know it.
And
it's awful.
The person's sitting there and, you know, they go back into a, you know, a deep depression, or they go, mm-hmm. you know, have, you know, psychotic episodes.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, and it's taken them, and you can't blame the psychiatrist because they're booked like,
I know,
you know, beyond belief.
I know it.
And that's why this telepsychiatry has come in,
mm-hmm.
Which they have in the medical center here in Hunterdon Medical Center. Because
oh,
they,
really?
Yeah, they do. It's if someone comes into the ER, either
mm-hmm.
attempted suicide or OD'd
right.
or, you know, whatever, or talking about suicide, and they don't want to, you know, they ask them if they would like to speak to a psychiatrist or if they would speak to a psychiatrist, rather than calling up one of the local ones from Hunterdon County and have them come in the middle of the night to talk to the patient, they have this telepsychiatry where they, you know, have someone. Now, the psychiatrist has to be licensed in the state of New Jersey, which they are,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
they could be in Nevada, for that matter, you know,
mm-hmm.
And talk to them by, what is that, Skype?
Right.
Yeah, you know.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah, it is. You know, and the patient doesn't have to do it. They can wait till the morning.
Right.
But 9 times out of 10, they'll say yes, and, you know, they'll talk to the...
Yeah, but, you know, like postpartum gets me... I hate this sound like this is ironic, but postpartum depression gets me down because these women are just starting their families. They don't
mm-hmm.
have $700 for the first hour and then $475
mm-hmm.
for half hour period that get covered by like $100, and then they get $370 out of their pockets. It makes me a little I hate to say I get down, but I get very down for these women because they're just starting out with a new family. You don't plan to get postpartum depression. So
no,
they don't
of course
have it in
not.
Budget. They
and you know,
don't have it in their budget.
The thing is too that, you know, as I told you, my youngest son, we have 4 children. The youngest has schizophrenia, and I also said he has been epileptic. Well, he's epileptic since he's 5.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be part of the reason why he's very religious about taking his medication.
Right.
Been taking it for,
I think my
you know,
son saw me take medication all my life, so he does his medication. He takes his medication.
Right.
But we're fortunate enough to be able to afford a psychiatrist. That's good.
Mm-hmm. Well, the point is, too, that a couple years back, there's a drug in India for epileptics that's been around for about 25 years. Europe,
mm-hmm.
it's been around for 20. Canada for 15. His doctor at the time, who has since moved way down South Jersey, so he can't go to him anymore, but his doctor at the time was Indian, and
mm-hmm.
he would go visit his family in India, and bring some of this medication back for some of his patients that were having 10, 12, 15 seizures a day.
Really?
Now, my son would have maybe 5 to 10 a week.
Mm-hmm.
He finally got him on, okay to get on. They finally allowed it into this country. And they, you know, he had to write all sorts of letters and everything, and he got him on it. They put him in Princeton Hospital, drained him off his epileptic medication that he was on, put him on the new one. He hasn't had a seizure in 2 years.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Now, it is wonderful. But in India, it's $5 for a 30-day supply.
Mm-hmm.
In Europe, it's about 20, 25. Canada, it's 15. You have any idea? Want to take a guess on what it is here?
A couple hundred, right?
Yeah, try like $980 for a 30-day supply.
Oh, so what do you do?
What do you do? What does the average person...
That's what these people are faced with. You know, I'm not going to say who I'm for or against the president.
No, I'm not either.
They did ask Hillary Clinton, what was she's the least prepared to handle as a candidate for president? And she said, what I was totally unprepared for was people coming up to me and asking me, what are we going to do about the amount of mental illness and the lack of treatment in this country? And she said, you know, I had no answers. I mean, even the president admits it's a big, not the president, sorry, I don't mean to say that, but even she realizes there's a big problem.
Right, there is.
And she said, people are asking, and she has no answers for it yet.
It's
not just us saying it's awful. The amount of people out there for these people that have mental illnesses and need help, it's just not there. And
right.
It breaks my heart.
Right. And, you know, I mean, all right, Medicare help pay my son's part of it. But, you know, the average person, if you're married and have a couple kids and a mortgage and car payments, pay taxes, and how do you afford that?
For a 30-day
supply. Your round figure is $1,000 for a 30-day supply. That's ridiculous.
It's awful.
Especially when you can go to Canada and get it for $15.
And
if
awful.
You took the bottle from India and the bottle in the United States and put them side by side, the ingredients are exactly the same.
It's awful.
The reason I know is because his doctor did.
Mm-hmm.
They're exactly the same. So, I mean, you know, it's just sad. It really
it's
is.
It's heartbreaking to me. It's one of the most frustrating things that I face every day. As moms come to me every day, and I have nowhere to tell them to go.
Right, right. And, you know,
I mean, like, I could listen to them, and I understand their problems, and I could empathize with them, but I can't. I'm not a physician.
Right.
And I'm not a therapist. I'm a kindergarten teacher. I can't help them. They need help. And I can't find anybody that it just breaks my heart.
You know, when I said I heard you speak at the Flemington, you know, grammar school or wherever, it was one of the schools in Flemington earlier this year, and you had said that when I think it was you said you had cancer,
right,
and everybody all brought food and called
mm-hmm,
and anything
mm-hmm.
we can do. Can we take care of the kid? Can we walk the dog? Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But when you went for depression or post-traumatic depression,
mm-hmm. yeah, nobody said anything. Mm-hmm.
And
when I made up my mind that I would always because when you're the first lady, people want you to speak all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted me to speak about breast cancer. And I used to say, I don't want to speak about breast cancer. Anybody could speak about breast cancer. I said, when I had chemo, I'd show up to the hospital, and everybody on the floor for chemo would say, oh, you're going to get over this. You're going to beat this. This is, and then you have to get prepped for shock therapy the same way in a hospital. They have to give you, you know, the IV and all. And
mm-hmm.
nobody talked to me. I was 9 months pregnant. I mean, you obviously could see me. How could you miss me at 9 months? And they would talk to my husband about the weather, about sports.
Right.
Like I was the elephant in the room I looked like an elephant. But nobody even wanted to look at me or talk to me. And you know something? I had so much self-hate, I didn't blame him for not wanting to talk to me because I didn't want to look at me either. That's how bad the self-hate right. was.
But, you know, ironically enough, I've had people talk to me. I had a psychiatrist who suffers from depression.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing. When they thought she had cancer, everybody was, you know, like you said, mm-hmm. calling, for bringing food over. She says, I could have fed an army with the food that they brought.
Mm-hmm.
When I went into the hospital for depression, nobody called.
Exactly.
Nobody sent anything. You know, yeah, and it's, you know, it's
but
not like you.
Say anything.
It's not
That's
like
why it's speak up when you're down.
It's not. Yeah.
That's why the title was speak up when you're down. Because the first step in getting help is to talk about it.
And you know, the thing is, you didn't ask for it. My son didn't ask for it. He didn't raise mm-hmm. his hand and say, "Hey, give it to me. I want it." You know,
mm-hmm.
it's just a chemical imbalance of the brain,
mm-hmm.
basically.
It's an illness.
It's an illness. It's mm-hmm. like any other illness. It's like diabetes, mm-hmm. cancer, you know, you mm-hmm. name it. It's the flu.
Cancer was much easier, I have to say it. I had a double mastectomy and cancer pretty bad, easier than depression.
Because
I didn't hate myself for having cancer.
Right.
I hated myself for not being happy after my baby was born.
Yeah, that's, you know, yeah, I can
that's
understand.
That's why
yeah.
I wanted women to realize it's not them, it's an illness. I felt like it was me.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I had to change.
Right. That's what you had to accept, that it wasn't you.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I had to change for other women who were going to come after me.
Right. Exactly. Tracy, you have a question?
Yes. Could we talk about maybe some positive steps that are on the horizon that might help someone right now who is dealing with this issue? You mentioned this Postpartum Support International.
Mm-hmm.
What are some things a woman can do?
Well, now when a woman and her family goes into the hospital to have a baby, they get a leaflet and people are all ears on the maternity floor for anything that looks like it could be a depression, and then they're given the hotline, they're given the therapist. I don't know, still it's not good about the amount of people there to help these women, but there is an awareness and there's a lot less shame, and you can call Postpartum Support International. You can go online and find all kinds of websites about it and all kinds of help there. I'm not sure what's free and what's not free, but people know, and there's all kinds of literature out there now about it, and many more. Well, when I went to Harvard to talk to OBGYNs, they said that they were going to change their practices completely on how they deal with women with postpartum depression, and they were going to get the word out. That OBGYNs and like pediatricians used to be a separate entity, and now they're talking more about the psychiatrist and the pediatrician talking mm-hmm. to one another. You know, of course, with the patient's permission to try to help mm-hmm. the woman because mm-hmm. like, if a woman has a baby, the pediatrician just wants to see the baby, and the OBGYN that delivered the baby just wants to look at the wrong end. But now we have these sciences trying mm-hmm. to connect to one another so that they could deal with the whole woman, not just parts of the woman, and help bring her out of depression.
Well, that sounds
good.
But
we still have a long way to go.
Right.
I mean, I wish I could say things are great, but
We
still have a long way to go.
Exactly.
And as far as the screening and education that's taking place in hospitals, is that in most states now? Or do you
No.
think?
In fact, no. The there's a board in the country that tells when people when to do things, like this board, I don't know their name, but they tell you when to have a mammogram, and that's for the country. Everybody at a certain age should have a mammogram. Well, this committee came up with wanting the whole country to be screened for postpartum depression, and they're working on it. So far, New Jersey is the only state that has it. But the rest of the country, like I'm going to Arizona this week, and all the other states now are working to get it. So we're getting there. But, you know, New Jersey is first because I had it 30 years ago and opened my mouth about it. But the other states are trying to follow suit. And I know when the committee came out with we should have postpartum screening for all new moms across the country, that was on every news channel that night. It was on all the major, you know, Channel 2, Channel 5, I saw them all. I was flicking back and forth, and it was mentioned that throughout the country we should have a screening, and it was like in the Times. It was in the Times twice, front page, the headlines about postpartum depression, having New Jersey be the first, and other states are trying to follow suit now. So in the future, there'll be more. Mm-hmm. And more than that. So that's hopeful. Mm-hmm.
It is. And, you know, and like we said earlier, you know, people like yourself and anybody else speaking out about it has got to help, you know.
Mm-hmm. I did an interview with Brooke Shields. She had postpartum depression. So Brooke Shields and I went to Washington to testify before Congress about the need for services and education. The public. Mm-hmm. And Senator Menendez, he put forth the Melanie Bucker-Stokes Mothers Act, and that's how we got it through New Jersey. But it takes people to open their mouth, and famous people, of course, Brooke Shields is an actress and a model.
Right.
So they were going to, and they put it in, and they put it in People magazine. They took that when we went to Washington. They covered that in People magazine, and that got a lot of positive press for new moms.
Right. Right. Well, you know, like Demi Lovato came out, and I'm not—I'm a country western fan, so you know Demi Lovato's music is not my thing. But she came out, and she suffers from bipolar, and you know, she said she would at times stay up 2 and 3 days,
all night long,
writing songs. She would write 5-6 songs a night, and thought it was normal, you know. And now she's under medication, and she talks like she goes to the NAMI National convention and spoke at that. And, you know, so more people like her and you and, you know, others go out and talk about things like this. It helps, you know, it really does. Because
I always wanted when someone got admitted to a psychiatric hospital, I always wanted them to be treated like they were a senator's wife or they were a governor's wife. I wanted to give dignity to it. And that's like, that was my dream. You know, I mean, I wasn't treated well in a psychiatric hospital back then, but now, like, now that I'm more known because my husband was a governor, I always wanted people, when they get psychiatric people, they need to be respected. They need to be helped, and they need to be respected. And I thought, well, if I could do it because I'm a first lady and give respect to people, that's what I want. I want for them so much because they don't like themselves very much, and they should.
And you know, the thing is, too, that when our son was transferred from Carrier Clinic to...
That's where I was.
Right. Well, he was there for 28 days, and my insurance ran out. And they transferred him to Trenton Psych. And he was there for almost 20 months. And then I think it was Governor Whitman who was in office at the time, and she said that if you have a psychiatric hospital in the county in which you live, you should be transferred to that hospital, and Trenton Psych transferred him to Hagedorn. So anyway, but, you know, people said, oh, Trenton Psych, oh, God, oh, it's terrible. Well, I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that my son had someone come visit him. And it was day or night.
Terrible, though. Everybody should have somebody.
Yeah, but unfortunately, people don't.
They don't.
And that's the thing, I think, where, you know, if the staff knows, they didn't know when I would come because I could make my own hours. So I could go in the afternoon. I could go early in the morning. I could go late at night. You know, my wife was certain times she would go. She would be at night or on the weekend. Whereas I could go anytime during the week. And they never knew when somebody was coming to see my son.
So they were careful.
So I thought, I feel anyway, that they were more careful of those who had people visit them. But some of the people that were there had no one.
I know.
And they don't have any brothers or sisters. Their mother and father was gone.
Or they
gave up on them, right. And so there is nobody.
Well, my husband went undercover in Marlboro and had the whole hospital shut down. He went down.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, he had the whole hospital shut down because he went as a convicted criminal. And he got a job working the night shift, and he wrote about all that, all the mistreatment that went on for the mentally ill. And they closed the hospital down. So we're trying.
No, yes, absolutely. We, like you said before, we have a long way to go yet. But, you know, with every one that we, you know, every small step is a giant step, basically.
Yeah, that's
know?
Great. I know.
And that's what's so wonderful. And, you know, like I said, you going around like to Arizona and wherever and talking, it gets the word out more, not only in New Jersey, which needs
right.
it, but as I'm sure you're aware, New Jersey is better than a lot of the states around.
Yeah, I know.
And, you know, even though it's better, it's not good enough, you know, unfortunately. And, you know, it still has a lot of floors. But you turn around and look at some of the other states, and they're not as on it as we are. You know? So, for lack of better words. But, you know, and it's a shame. It truly is a shame, you know. But, you know, it's one of those things that the more we do, the more we put the word out, the more we're, you know, radio shows and people talking and giving, you know, speeches and so on and so forth, it helps. Because if you
I've noticed is I've always loved teaching, so I never wanted to give up my job to, even when he became governor, I didn't give up my job. But people, so I don't ask to speak anywhere because I have to take time off from work.
Right.
But I'm
right.
still getting invited. It's been 10 years, and I still get invited 2, 3, 4 times a year all over the country at their request, not mine, which is good because it means people are ready to listen, people are ready to do something. Otherwise, they wouldn't invite me.
Exactly. And I got to tell you, everybody I spoke to who was at that presentation you gave at the school in Flemington was just totally amazed, you know, and how great they were. My son, I was talking to my son yesterday, my son that's ill, and he said that, he says, who you have coming on the radio tomorrow, Dad? I said, well, I have Mary Jo Cody, the former governor's wife. Oh, she's the lady that spoke at, you know, such and such school. I says, yeah, that's right. And he says, oh, she was awesome.
Well, that's
great. Well, you know, I says, yes, she was. And everybody I spoke to said the same thing, you know.
Oh, that's sweet. That's
well,
nice.
I think that, you know, you reach people, you know.
I hope so. I just want to make it better for them.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the more you can, the more both of us can. You, me, everybody, you know, Tracy, everybody. It helps, you know. And like you said, you know, it's more small steps, but if you can get one person and help one person, it's all worth it, you know. So, because we've all gone through hell of some sort or another, you know.
Right.
You living it and me and my wife and my other kids surviving it, you know.
When my son was when he was diagnosed with bipolar, that practically killed me, too.
Well, yeah,
sure. It's painful to be a family member watching it as it is to go through it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh. You know, I can't thank you enough for coming on. I really can't.
I can't thank you enough for doing your show.
Well, you know, that means you'll only have to come back. You know that.
That's okay. I would be glad to.
And tell Beth.
It's our job.
Yeah. Tell Beth Milton. Is it Milton, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Milton.
Tell her I said hello. Okay.
I will. Thanks for having me. Okay.
Thank you so much,
Mrs. Cody.
It's been wonderful. And I will reach out to Beth down the road and, you know, maybe we can get you on in the summer when you don't have to go to school.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness?
Yeah,
NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters of Weikert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime, and selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 and Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technology to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
Our signals group has found no signal anomalies for the signal system leading to the terminal. They duplicated the accident route with signal alignment.
A spokeswoman for the National Transportation Safety Board addressing the media as they continue their investigation of the deadly crash. The investigators say that one of the data recorders pulled from the wreckage isn't working and is still too dangerous to retrieve the second recorder. The train's engineers told investigators all he remembers is waking up on the floor of the cab. The most significant hurricane in almost a decade is raging in the Caribbean. The National Hurricane Center says because it's moving slowly, it'll dump massive amounts of rain wherever it goes.
Matthew's a slow mover, so it could produce 15 to 25 inches of rain. And believe it or not, with